Welcome to our most recent podcast series, Collective Intelligence. At a moment when the shape of work is being redrawn, we seek to explore the magic that happens when groups perform at more than the sum of their parts. A theme we researched extensively in our book, The Social Brain, The Psychology of Successful Groups. I'm delighted to welcome Annelise Luck and Chris Whitehorn to the podcast. Today, we're going to be exploring the collective intelligence that comes from sharing a job. Annelise and Chris share not just any job, but they are collectively Deputy CEO and Chief Delivery Officer for the UK Space Agency. Welcome, both of you. It's lovely to have you on the podcast.
Great to be here.
Thank you.
Before we dive in, and I'm really interested to hear about just the mechanics of how you make a job share of such a big role work, perhaps we can start with the UK Space Agency itself. You know, out of my ignorance, when it comes to my mind, I think of astronauts and moonwalks and asteroids and so on. And I know your remit is much wider than that. Perhaps I can start with you, Chris, and you could perhaps tell us a little bit about the focus of the agency.
Yes, of course. And thanks, Tracy, for having us on the show. Space matters. Space is part of our society, and I can guarantee that if you're listening to this podcast, you will have used space today, be it getting from A to B, doing a financial transaction, using the internet, receiving a weather forecast. All these things are now reliant on space. So space has moved from being perhaps in the 1960s, a bit of a geopolitical arms race between Russia and America to get a person on the moon. It's now just part of society. And that's what we're here in the UK Space Agency to do. We're part of the UK government, and we are here to lead and bring together the space sector in the UK. We've got three main purposes. We're here to boost UK prosperity, and space is great at doing that. It's a really great high-tech industry. We have a science mission. We're here to understand our universe through really exciting leading-edge science programs, often done in international partnership. And really importantly, we're here to protect our planet and outer space, both from the climate emergency, where space is a real key part of fighting climate change, but also to make sure that space is available for us today, but also for future generations. So things like the problem of space junk and so on. So that's what we're here to do. And we bring together the whole of the UK space ecosystem to do that.
Fantastic. Well, should we turn to the theme of the podcast, which is collective intelligence? And I applied for a job share when I was in my early 30s, having had my first child. And I thought it was kind of an obvious way for me back then to keep my hand in a way professionally, but also cope with the kind of maelstrom of a new child at home and everything. And I was treated then as if I was a mad woman. And yet here you guys have managed to share your jobs and to make it work. And Annelise, did you have to fight to get this?
No, I mean, it was one of those kind of special magic moments back in January 2021, right in the depths of COVID at the time. And it was quite a gloomy, cold winter, if you remember at the time. And I was the programme director for testing and test and trace, working, as you can imagine, like many people in the country, very long hours to try and support the nation through that quite difficult period. And I'd been asked at actually quite short notice to set up the hotel quarantine service. If you recall, at the time we had a situation that if you were coming back from certain countries, you had to spend 10 days in a hotel before you could return back to your home. And so therefore the Cabinet Office had to find somebody to replace me in test and trace. And they approached Chris, and Chris phoned me, and we had a conversation about it. And during that conversation, Chris said to me, "I work 4 days a week. Do you think that will be a problem?" And I was like, "It's not going to work. The hours are just remarkable." And we had a good conversation about it. And Chris decided it wasn't for him. But in that conversation, and I think probably out of tiredness and desperation, I said, "If you ever fancy a job share, let me know." And actually, the conversation continued then, and it was like, well, actually, no, that would be quite interesting. So we stayed in touch for some time, and we both happened to choose to apply for a talent program that the Cabinet Office was running. And when we were both successful on that program, we asked whether we could be put together as a job share for our very first role. And so that's how it happened. So I wasn't part-time at the time, Chris was, but that's how the relationship began.
And Chris, what are the joys of it? I mean, what you seem very clear right from the start that you weren't going to work full time. How does it work for you?
Well, perhaps I'll start at the end. I would never go back. Why on earth would I want to go and do a job on my own again? And so how have I got to that point? Because that's certainly not what I would say at the start. Well, firstly, this keeps me working for the government. And actually, hats off to the government. And it was the Department for Transport, because our first job was in the railways. This is our second job share job. Really embrace this. And frankly, if the government didn't allow me to do this, I would go somewhere else. So this has kept me in the workforce. I have a second career, as Tracy knows, as a trombone teacher and running a music charity for children. And I want to do that. But also I want to give something to the government and use my professional skills as an engineer and a programme delivery leader. This enables me to do that. So this was, for me, the path to allow both parts of my life to coexist and still retain a sensible balance with home and everything else that's going on. I tried working part-time in a big job, and that is properly tough because nobody expects you to be working part-time in a big job. They expect a full-time level of output. They expect the 24/7 responsiveness. And you saying, I'm sorry, I don't do Mondays, doesn't really work. Whereas in a job share, we can get around that, and perhaps we can explore some of that as we go on in the chat. But it allows us to deliver that full service to our organisation, if you like, and that full capability while still having a life ourselves and allow us to pursue other things that we want to do outside.
It makes such sense the way you describe it. I mean, I'm just, as I said earlier, I'm just amazed that there's not more of this going on, and perhaps we can explore that in a little bit. The Space Agency gets your capabilities. They're not the same capabilities. So they get, kind of two for the price of one. So tell me how you see one another's strengths. And perhaps I could ask you, Annelise, how you see Chris's strengths. And Chris, if I could ask you how you see Annelise's strengths.
Yeah, I mean, it's what you get with a job share is you don't get two exactly the same people. You get two people with a whole breadth of skills and experience that they bring to the party. And Chris and I consider it like a Venn diagram. There's a kind of a piece in the middle that where we have very similar skills, very similar experiences. But there are some things that Chris is really, really great at. I can do a bit of it, but nowhere near as good as Chris, and vice versa. So I think the question that you're asking is that kind of that part of the Venn diagram where we're different. Chris's knowledge of kind of proper ninja commercial practices with key industry players far outweighs my knowledge of commercial. I think also the experience that he brings to the job about working with international partners in a very complex business environment, again, totally outweighs what I've got in my past.
And I guess conversely to that, just maybe talk a bit about the bit in the middle. What one of the things that's really important is that we fundamentally look and think about the world in pretty similar ways. And perhaps we'll talk about our first date later on, where we started exploring that a little bit. But perhaps on the other side of the Venn diagram then. So Annelise has got an amazing background in change management and particularly complex organisational transformation. So that's a sort of bit of technical expertise, which was especially relevant for our first job when we were senior responsible owner for the transformation of the nation's railways back in the Department for Transport. But perhaps on the sort of the softer skill side, I think one of the things that Annelise is amazing at is working behind the scenes to make really difficult things happen. We all know that stuff doesn't happen in the great summit meeting. The stuff happens because of all the hard work that's done behind the scenes. And I have learned a huge amount from Annelise about how she goes about engineering. That sounds wrong. Discussing and debating and working with people to come up with the right answer behind the scenes. That's a real skill and an underrated one. And we've learned a lot from each other over the last 2.5 years. And I continue to learn. I'm in awe of some of those things that Annelise is amazing at, which I'm less good at.
That's wonderful. That collaborative spirit, generosity of spirit comes across in both of your answers there. I mean, back to your first date, as you put it, did you set up the way that you were going to work together very deliberately in terms of, you know, really plotting it out in terms of sort of principles? And I'm thinking about anticipating times when perhaps you aren't in that sweet spot of the Venn diagram where you disagree, maybe, or disagreement about how to deal with challenges. How did you anticipate that or set that up? Or how do you deal with those moments that inevitably must arise in such a complex area as you're working?
Yeah, absolutely. So there was a real key part of the history between that phone call back in January 2021. And then, as Chris said, when we became senior responsible owners for rail transformation within Department for Transport, we had what Chris and I always jokingly talk about as the first date. And actually, you know, put aside the fact that we're male and female, job share is like a marriage. And if you really think of it from the very outset, like a marriage, it sets you up for real success. We had what was a 4-hour lunch where we really explored each other's values, core values, our personalities, what we're like when we're at our best, what we're like when we're at our worst, to really understand whether we were really aligned in how we would think and operate together. We're both great believers of diversity of thought, and we both believe in this concept called the incomplete leader model, where no leader has all the attributes you would want from a leader. But actually, we thought about that long and hard, because actually, personality-wise, we're very similar. We are naturally decisive people, naturally go more with gut feel than go with analysis. But that's okay, because as long as we have the people around us that can make up for that deficit. And that becomes remarkably important when you go into a job share, because actually, if you are too different in personality, if one of us was a gut feel, let's get on with it kind of person, and the other one was a bit more risk averse, I need to see the evidence, etc., you're going to clash as two people. We were quite lucky. We both had a very long background in the Ministry of Defence, so some of our kind of core upbringing was very similar in how we went about solving problems and thinking through things through. So it was a very long conversation. We went away and had a good think about it. I carry on with the analogy about marriage. You've got to decide, you know, the benefit of what we were doing is we were moving into a new house together, a new job together. I think it's a lot trickier if someone's already doing the job and somebody else then joins them in a job share, because then they're effectively moving into the house that that person's already occupying. And so you've got to think about, you know, what of your furniture are you prepared to bring with you, and what are you okay to let go of? You've got to think about things like, actually, are you happy to be performance managed together, or do you want to be performance managed separately? Because that really changes how you might interact with each other. So those are some of the conversations we had before we even started. There were some core principles about how we wanted to operate. If we were ever disagreed, we don't want to do that in front of the team. It's not helpful to the team. So if we do ever find ourselves in a situation where actually we're not sure we're both on the same page, usually there's a kind of quiet team's message going, I think we need to take this one away. And we'll kind of just kind of say to the team, let's do a bit more thinking rather than disagree with each other in front of the team, because that's not helpful.
We have two really simple rules which we tell the teams and people who work with us. First one, if you've told one of us, assume that you've told both of us. So we will do the joining up behind the scenes, and we basically run our lives through a continual WhatsApp chat of what's going on and so on. So it saves people having to explain things twice if we're not both there. So that's rule one. The second rule is, if one of us decides, if it's a formal approval process, like we're approving a finance thing, or it's a safety related thing, whatever it is, it's good for both of us. I think if you don't have that, you've undermined the fundamental trust which has to exist in the job share. So we have those two rules, and we are performance managed together. We have one staff report. We have one performance marking. So you really are in this together. We stand or fail together. There is no incentive on us to get one up on the other. That just doesn't work. And we were very keen when we designed this that we put that in place. We're in it together, and it does feel like a marriage. You know, for better or for worse, we're in this.
You're both such advocates for this way of working. You make it sound so obvious. I encounter so many exhausted, burnt out leaders. And I mean, I'm just interested in your perspective. Why do you think actually it's so rare in a leadership position to have a job share, when you're such, you know, such advocates and so convincing in the way you talk about it? I don't know, Chris, maybe begin with you.
I think there's a big fear of the unknown. And I was interested, I was talking, I do some non-exec director work in education, and I was talking to the CEO of a multi-academy trust who said this just couldn't work in education. And I challenged him on it and really picked it up. He was talking about accountability. And I said, well, Annalise and I, in our previous role, were SRO, Senior Responsible Owner, for the biggest transformation program the government was running. You could go to gov.uk website and you could read our letter of appointment. We were personally accountable to Parliament for the delivery of that program. We, not I or Annalise, but we. If the government can do it, and they can have a transformation program that affects 250,000 people working in the railway sector, accountable to a job share. I defy any industry to say they can't do it there. And I think so much of this is about debunking some of the myths, showing real examples, explaining why it can work, how we deal with issues like that. But I think that's why we're keen to do podcasts and talk to anybody about this, because I, like you, I've spent my career, I've been that burnt out leader supporting operations in Afghanistan. I've seen my colleagues broken by the pressure of running big programs in government and industry. This is just not sustainable. And the lovely thing about job share is I can shut my laptop on a Monday. I'm 100% confident that Annalisa's got this, and I'll open my laptop on Tuesday and pick it up. And I have a lovely day teaching kids to play the trombone. I just couldn't do that if it was just me. And I think this is just such a sustainable, resilient way of working. I don't know why more people don't do it. I just think it's because people are too scared. And that's part of our mission, is to get the message out that you can do this.
What was quite interesting, as you could tell, I didn't put a huge amount of thought about going part-time when I first suggested that we went into a job share. And I remember actually our very first week, I had my non-working day on a Thursday. It was raining in November and I was doing the ironing, thinking this was a very expensive way to do the ironing. But actually, I've got a 12-year-old boy, and how it works for me is I will work 5 days a week during the kind of the busy periods, which typically is after summer recess or in the spring, etc., which means actually when Parliament's in recess, happens to be the same time as the school holidays, that's when I take my non-working day. So I'm getting a better quality life with my family, more time with my son. But actually for Chris, it works better because on a Monday, he's got a commitment. So it doesn't have to be actually one of you takes a day off a week or whatever. It can work in much more adaptable way. As long as you've got that coverage, you can work in a way that actually allows you to manage your part-time working with what your caring responsibilities might be.
Yeah, we also somehow carry an image, don't we, of the sort of heroic leader as a single figure in our imaginations, in a way. And you're right, Chris, accountability and is another issue that people are scared of. But I mean, you're such an example of how you've made it work. I was interested, going back to an answer that you gave a couple ago about it being like a marriage. And I don't know if you mind me asking, I mean, do you think it's more successful, the fact that you're a man and a woman in this? Do you think that makes a difference?
I don't think so. It's more successful. I think it is successful. And I think one of the reasons it is successful is because of that. As Annalise said, we both really strongly believe in the importance of diversity of thought and an inclusive approach and so on. What Annalise has done for me is to open my eyes to how the world is seen, the world of work is seen by a woman, where after some meetings, particularly in the railways, which, let's be fair, is a pretty male-dominated workforce, after the meeting, Annalise would reflect to me about how she felt about the way she was treated by some of the people in the meeting, and how, for example, if she had made a suggestion, she was challenged on it, not unreasonably. If I'd made the suggestion, they said, what's a good idea, Chris? And how that made her feel, to the point actually now that I'm super sensitized to it, and actually would go after the meeting and pick people up on it and say, did you realize how you treated me and Annalise differently, purely because she's a woman and I'm not? So I think it's certainly made me a better and more empathetic, not just leader, person, because it's just opened my eyes to that. But I think what you do get, everybody's different. And I don't want to sort of stereotype it, it's man and woman. But I think by having a diversity in there, you get that extra strength and that extra depth, which you just don't have in one person. And you also have what Annalise and I have as a friend. And whenever work environment you're in, your boss is still your boss. Your colleague is still your colleague, or your team has still got, everybody's got their motivations. Between us, we only have one motivation, which is to make our job share successful. So we all have our bad days and we have our good days. We talk about it, we work it through, and we've got someone. And that resilience you never get from a single individual. You often see two women doing job share, but like your example, Tracy, coming back from maternity leave, you very rarely, but occasionally see two men doing it. I'm a great proponent of male job share because it's even less common than females doing job share. So I think it's more about diversity, but I think we have had some particularly useful insights. I certainly have, from it being a male-female job share. I don't know what you think, Annalise.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely right. And just that point that Chris made, you know, the loneliness of leadership, you're not lonely because you're always in it together and you're always completely incentivized in the same way. And I, you know, when I look back on our time together as a job share, there were times which were, I was really quite low, but actually Chris carried me through, and vice versa, where Chris was quite low. I mean, actually seldom was there a time when we were both really low, but, you know, we managed to kind of keep each other spurred on when things got really, really hard. And we've been through some pretty, pretty dark times together, you know, because these jobs are big, they are hard. And, you know, jobs seldom are 37 hours a week at this kind of leadership level. And of course, you know, if you are working 60 odd hours a week, you aren't thinking at your best. Whereas what you've got in a job share, because you're not doing those same long hours, is you're always completely on it because you're always a bit more fresh in your thinking.
Well, this is such an inspiring conversation. I'm thinking, if there's anyone listening to this thinking, actually, if I could have a job share, you know, there's something that would really, really work for me. Is there any piece of wisdom or advice that you would give to that person, just in the light of your experience, your successful experience, actually?
It's that very first conversation. Find the first person who says, yes, I'll be in a job share, and just go into it. If that relationship isn't built on really firm foundations with really clear aligned incentives, really good alignment of core values, you're going to fail. And so kind of really make sure you invest that time and think of it, as I say, as if you are going into a real partnership, because that's what you are doing is what I would recommend.
And I guess my top tip would be to start with just talk about it. Talk about it to other people. If Annalise and I hadn't had that chance conversation, almost like the throwaway line at the end of the chat about test and trace, this probably would never have happened. Talk about it. The more people you talk about it to, it's not a sign of weakness. And I've had this conversation with men, particularly in the defence environment, which is quite, again, a male-driven sort of culture. It is not a sign of weakness to say, I don't want to work full-time. It's not a sign of weakness to say, I'm willing to share my job with somebody else. Get over that. Just talk about it to people, and you will find other people thinking the same. And that's why we talk a lot about it in the public domain and within our organisation, because if people see us talking about it, it gives them permission to talk about it. And I think part of it is just starting the conversation. There are a lot of people out there, I suspect, who would really like to do this, who are just even too scared to ask because they fear their organisation will think less of them for asking of it.
That's a wonderful place to end. And hopefully this podcast can be the start of the conversation for some people listening. And just to say thank you so much for listening, we will put some links to the UK Space Agency in the show notes for this podcast. And thank you so much to Annalise and Chris for a great conversation.
Thank you very much.
Thanks, Tracy.